This is NHPR. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The past 2 years in New Hampshire politics have seen some deep divides over almost any issue you can name. Taxes, spending, unions, health care, guns, and on and on. But yesterday, in her inaugural address, New Hampshire's new governor, Maggie Hassan, said she hoped to put that era behind.
Today, as I was sworn in as your governor, I pledged to follow the constitutions of New Hampshire and the United States. Now I will make one more promise. I will work as hard as I can to honor your trust. I will strive to do so in the tradition that has guided us throughout our history, the tradition of openness, bipartisanship, and collective problem solving.
And Hassan's problem-solving skills will be put to the test soon when she releases her budget plan next month. That's where goals and aspirations get down to real numbers, including Hassan's desire to restore certain cuts that the last legislature made. Still, so far, on day two of Hassan's administration anyway, lawmakers from both sides said they appreciated the tone of her inauguration speech, including her recognition that state finances are still constrained. Today in The Exchange, what's ahead for Governor Hassan and reaction to yesterday's inauguration address? Let's hear from you. What did you think of the new governor's speech? What more do you wish you heard? And moving forward, what do you hope her administration will focus on, especially in these first few months? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Or you can post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. We have two guests in the studio. Kevin Landrigan is here, political reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua, lead writer for thelobbynh.com. And Kevin, welcome back. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
Also with us, Josh Rogers, NHPR's senior political reporter. And Josh, thank you also for taking some time for us this morning.
Good morning, Laura.
We'll also get reaction, guys, later on, not only from our listeners, but from several state lawmakers. But just kicking off, Kevin, if you could, what's the goal of an inauguration speech? What does it need to do? What doesn't it need to do?
Well, the most important thing to remember about inaugural speeches are the best ones aren't memorable. Really, what a new governor needs to do is to set a mood for their administration, but also sort of define how they view the state and where we are right now. And I thought she accomplished that pretty well. She talked about the need for collaboration and cooperation in the State House. She talked about the end to a hasty, reactive state government that was obviously a real slap at the controversial administration of House Speaker Bill O'Brien. She attempted to essentially say, "Here's how we're going to turn the page, but we're not going to turn it radically." And I think I've always felt that inaugural speeches are trap speeches, and by that I mean politicians can trap themselves with an inaugural speech that tries to accomplish too much, that sets too many lofty goals, that lists this lengthy agenda, which we can talk about and we'll talk about during this program. And everyone in the audience, that vast audience, there are a number of people who don't like this particular agenda item or that one, and suddenly you've set people into camps, and that's certainly not what a new governor wants to do.
So it's about setting a tone, presenting some big goals, but not really laying out any specifics.
No, not at all. And as I said, when there are so many things she didn't talk about in this speech that she could have talked about in this speech. She could have talked about expanding gambling in this speech, which she supports.
I was waiting for that, actually.
Which she supports in a limited way. And
right.
I think Josh and I anticipate, in some way, it may well be part of her budget address. Now, she gives this first speech, this introduction to herself to the state of New Hampshire, and talks about expanding gambling. Meanwhile, sitting behind her is the Speaker of the House, who's a vocal opponent of expanded gambling. Meanwhile, she's speaking in Representatives Hall that has not approved an expanded gambling bill of any major sort since the state lottery more than a half century ago. So you've suddenly set a very high bar for your administration right out of the gate. Not a good idea for any politician.
Well, interesting. So playing it safe is a good idea in these speeches. What do you think, Josh? I love Kevin's analogy about inauguration speeches are trap speeches. In other words, you're supposed to avoid certain traps.
Well, I mean, I think you also don't want to give your opponents, I mean, to Kevin's point, much to grab onto and sort of rally around. And I think I would agree that Governor Hassan did a good job in, you know, giving people a general sense of what she's hoping to do. And, you know, saving the specifics for later. I mean, another element that is, you know, a common, if not essential to an inaugural speech is, you know, offering some version of, you know, a New Hampshire exceptionalist message, why New Hampshire is a fantastic state and why people will come together and make it even better. And one thing that was interesting about her sort of brand of exceptionalism that I thought was a little bit different and maybe somewhat comes out of her background is as a legislator rather than – which we haven't had in the governor's office since Jean Shaheen. And even then, and even before her, there haven't – you know, in recent history, there have only been a few people who actually served in the state legislature who or in the Senate who ended up as governor. But hers, you know, wasn't simply the litany of stats that we've become accustomed to from Governor Lynch and from Governor Benson. You know, we're the best place to raise a family. We're the safest. We're the healthiest, you know, on and on. You know, she did also mention that you know, she talked about New Hampshire's role in the Civil War. She talked about same-sex marriage, which I thought was interesting. I mean, it was a bill that she really, you know, made happen as much as anybody else when she was in the legislature. And she talked about New Hampshire as being, you know, an all-hands-on-deck kind of state. And that's something we heard on the campaign trail. And, you know, she's going to need to forge that, you know, kind of fellow feeling among the legislature to get things done in a time when, you know, we have a divided government. We have the Senate controlled by Republicans, Democrats controlling the House, fiscal challenges, and an electorate, which the last several elections have proved is quite restive.
Yeah. In other words, going back and forth and back and forth. But and here we are on day two. So, of course, no real controversy has come up yet, as both of you alluded to. That'll come up once the budget hits the road. But you're right, Josh. I did hear from lawmakers yesterday, even those who, you know, were on the Republican side, they feel good that one of their own got promoted, so to speak.
That's a very good point. I mean, one of the things that's interesting about this is that I would hear throughout the campaign from legislators in both parties, we really like this man. He's obviously extremely very popular, but he doesn't engage us. He stays very much above the political fray.
You're talking about John Lynch there.
John Lynch very much lets the legislative process play out. And I think what you heard in this speech and what you'll see from this governor, that's different than the one leaving us now, is she's a seasoned legislator. She knows, and she spoke to that to the speech, I've done what you've done. I know it's a hard job. I know you have constituents to represent. But meanwhile, the interests of the entire state, you're obligated to serve. And as Josh pointed out, let's take same-sex marriage. Perfect example. Why? Because without Governor John Lynch, there could have been a same-sex marriage law. I don't think there could have been without Senator Maggie Hassan, who participated in amending the bill three times to meet the liking of a very restive Governor John Lynch, who had twice before in two previous campaigns said he'd veto a same-sex marriage law. So she knows the give and take that's required to attract the governor's support. She's on the other side now. And I think, as Josh pointed out, with a divided legislature, it's going to be a real challenge for her, for example, to appeal to a certain number of Republican state senators to accomplish her agenda.
Let me give out the phone number and then lots more questions for both of you. The phone number here in the exchange for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we look back at Governor Hassan's inauguration speech yesterday and ahead to the next steps by her new administration, 1-800-892-6477. If you heard the speech, what did you think? What more do you wish you heard? And moving forward, what do you hope this new administration will focus on, especially in these first few critical months? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. 1-800-892-6477. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Well, gentlemen, listening to the speech yesterday, a few major themes came up. And boy, education was definitely one of them. As a candidate, Hassan had repeatedly criticized the last legislature for its approach toward higher education. Let's hear what she said.
Cutting state support for public education in half while lowering the tobacco tax 2 years ago was short-sighted. It hurt our young people, and if not quickly addressed, will impair our future economic prosperity. We must begin to reverse course. In exchange, the university system working with us needs to increase the number of New Hampshire students admitted to our state colleges and universities and freeze in-state tuition.
And again, some of that applause, just to let folks know, was edited a little bit just to save us some time. But lots of applause there, Josh Rogers. And I can't remember any governor's election in all the years that I've been covering these races where higher education was such a huge deal.
Well, you know, as the whole cutting the tobacco tax while cutting education funding at the higher education level was, you know, perhaps the dominant soundbite of her candidacy, other than the fact that she was constantly saying that Ovid LaMontagne was extreme and would be like Speaker Bill O'Brien, who was also extreme. Those were the two things that she said over and over and over again. How they get there to come up with the money for the university system and fund some of the other priorities remains to be seen. You know, the tobacco tax is interesting because the way that was written into the last budget, if revenue targets weren't met, the tax decrease would sunset anyway. That's where we're headed. So the notion it's probably not going to be much of a fight to tack that 10 cents back on, because that's likely going to be the inevitable result if revenues don't meet the targets, and I don't think many people suspect they will.
Yeah.
It is a big issue in terms of affordability of college, and also she talked about the exodus of sort of promising young people leaving the state, the aging demographics of New Hampshire, and the fact that we're no longer a state that people migrate to is a big issue that all people in both parties do recognize.
All right. We'll talk a lot more after a short break and start getting some reaction from state lawmakers. You can join us, too, with your thoughts at 1-800-892-6477. And we'll be back in a minute.
Good morning. It's 9:19, and more on Governor Maggie Hassan takes office on The Exchange on NHPR, and at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, it's the Friday news roundup of the week's top national stories. The 2013 political season kicks off in New Hampshire as the new legislature takes its collective seat. Join Josh Rogers, NHPR's senior political reporter, Monday mornings at 7:30 for Political Front, a look at the political landscape of the Granite State. Again, that's Monday mornings at 7:30 on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Vineyard Brands, importers of Marcus de Caceres wines from the Rioja region of northern Spain. Information at vineyardbrands.com. And from Waldorf Schools of Southern New Hampshire, including High Mowing School, a boarding and day high school, offering a curriculum of arts-infused academics, highmowing.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, reactions to Governor Hassan's inaugural address yesterday. Let's get your thoughts at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on The Exchange page at nhpr.org. With me in studio, Kevin Landrigan, political reporter for The Telegraph of Nashua, lead writer for TheLobbyNH.com, along with Josh Rogers, NHPR's senior political reporter. And joining us now by phone is Jeb Bradley, Republican Senate Majority Leader from Wolfboro. And Senator Bradley, good to have you. Thanks for your time this morning.
Good morning, Laura. How are you? Happy New Year to all your listeners. And good morning, Kevin and Josh.
Well, and Happy New Year to you too, Senator Bradley. And just broadly, before we get into details, if we could please, your overall reaction to the speech yesterday. You were there.
Well, I think that Governor Hassan strove to be bipartisan. as your commentators, Kevin and Josh, have said, didn't stake out a lot of specific details, which I agree with them is appropriate for a first-time inaugural speech. I think she went out of her way to, you know, try to be inclusive and to indicate that the tone is going to be different than it's been, not just for the last 2 years, but really for the last several years in the State House. And I think that as we've approached things in the Senate over the last couple of years, that's a tone of working together that we're very familiar with, and so we look forward to it.
Well, and many Republicans yesterday echoed what you just said, Senator Bradley. They appreciated the bipartisan tone. Here's my question, though. How hard is it for lawmakers like yourselves to work together, given that there is always an election just around the corner?
Well, I think that if anything I've gleaned from the 2012 elections, people are struggling. Small business owners, working families, they're struggling. And the people that they send to Concord and to Washington, they expect us to act like adults and to, you know, stop, especially some of the shenanigans that we just saw with the fiscal cliff debate in Washington, to act like adults, to work to solve their problems, and to try to get our economy going again. And I think that, you know, we've seen a lot of wrangling over the last 4 or 5 years in the legislature since I've been back there, and I think voters said enough already, and so I think that will make it easier for us, even with our political differences, and let's face it, we have them. We're going to want to know how Governor Hassan's going to pay for new spending. We're not opposed, for instance, to getting more money to the university system. It was a tough decision that had to be made to balance our budget in the last time. So if we're going to do things like that, we want to know how things are going to be paid for. And that's a, you know, legitimate thing on our part. But to begin with, you know, we know Maggie very well. We like her. We respect her. She's somebody that we've worked with. And there's no reason that's not going to continue. And I think whatever disagreements we have, they'll be conducted in a much more agreeable fashion, in particular than what we're seeing in Washington. So,
Bradley, if I could just jump in, yeah.
And we'll act that way.
Right. And I want to bring our reporters into this conversation, actually. Josh Rogers, go ahead.
Senator, good morning. Should the public anticipate that Senate Republicans are going to take a very hard line on taxes? I mean, you say you want to know how Governor Hassan would raise the money to more fully fund higher education. Can we expect the Senate Republicans to say, you know, tough economy, we can't increase any taxes?
Well, I think that has been our focus over the last couple of years. We want to protect hardworking taxpayers and small business owners. We know that, for instance, the prospect of gambling is out there. Now, even though I've never been a supporter of it, I think that it's got a reasonable chance of passing this year. I think that Senator Chuck Morse has got if we're going to have gambling, he's got a way of dedicating that money to the university as well as to roads and bridges, which I think a lot of us feel are a priority need. So I think there is, you know, an opportunity without new taxes to potentially have a revenue source. It's going to be controversial. And I'm not saying I support it, mind you. I'm just being practical here in terms of how this budget gets put together. I think there's going to be quite a bit of support for it.
Senator Bradley, if I could jump back in. She did mention one specific yesterday, restoring the 10-cent increase to the cigarette tax that Governor Lynch had put in place and the legislature 2 years ago repealed. How do you think Senate Republicans are feeling about a 10-cent increase coming back and possibly increases even beyond that 10 cents?
Well, if you go back, Laura, to how that budget was put together and when that tax was implemented, there were a number of us in the Senate, Republicans, that did not support lowering the tax.
Right, I remember that. So you sunsetted it.
I happen to be one of them, okay? That's why it was structured. It's going to come back automatically if the revenues don't produce. They haven't produced to date. So it's just going to revert back to the $1.78 level on July 1st. So there's not, I don't think, going to be too much debate about that. Now, if there's an additional proposal to raise the cigarette tax, that will generate some debate.
And how will you feel about that debate? I'm just wondering, will you support beyond the 10 cents that's already on the books to come again?
I can't predict it. I'm not somebody that supports a lot of tax increases. I think that, especially, again, the numbers that just came out this morning on the economy are difficult. There are going to be tax increases coming out of Washington. I think we need to protect New Hampshire's tax advantage. And quite frankly, that seems to be what Governor Hassan is saying at this point in time also. To date, she hasn't proposed any new tax increases. So I think that's something that if that continues to be the case, you're going to see Republicans being able to work with Governor Hassan.
Senators, Kevin Landrigan, with regard to specific promises that Governor Hassan did make beyond vetoing a sales or income tax, the only other one that springs out from this speech was to try and double the research and development tax credit, which is, as you know, has been a very popular program. There's only up to $1 million in tax credits that are allowed, and it's always overpromised. In other words, companies that wanted the credit couldn't get the credit. Now, outgoing Governor John Lynch tried to do this for 2 years and was unable to achieve it.
Kevin, if you remember, this was a priority of Senate Republicans in the past 2 years. Bob O'Dell was the sponsor of the bill last year. He's the sponsor of the bill this time around. I think this time around it'll get happened, as you recall.
Yes.
An unrelated abortion bill was attached to it by our friends in the House that torpedoed the doubling of the research and development tax credit. And that was something that, unfortunately for Republicans, was talked about a lot in the campaign and sort of played into the narrative of what was happening with our friends in the House. And so I don't think you're going to see a repeat of that kind of behavior again and the research and development tax credit, because it's necessary to attract jobs to New Hampshire, is, in my opinion, that's going to be one of the first things that will occur. We'll pass that legislation, I think, easily in the Senate. It'll probably be a 24-0 roll call vote, I expect, because everybody's going to want to be on the record for that, and I think there'll be broad support for it in the House.
All right, Senator Bradley, thanks a lot for giving us your time this morning. We'll talk to you again, I'm sure.
As always, and again, Happy New Year.
Thank you. That's Senator Jeb Bradley, Republican, Senate Majority Leader from Wolfboro. We're taking your calls and reactions, too, to Maggie Hassan's inaugural speech yesterday. And even if you didn't hear the speech, what are your hopes for this new administration, especially in its first few months? Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Here's an email from someone who didn't give their name, who says, it seems like Governor Hassan is trying to emulate former Governor Lynch as a pragmatic and bipartisan in style. As much as this may endear her to some Republicans and most independents, I'm wondering if she'll alienate the liberal wing of the Democratic Party, as Lynch sometimes did. This is from Christopher in Manchester. What do you think about this, Josh Rogers?
Well, I mean, that's always a possibility. I mean, it begs the question of what are those folks going to do or where are they going to go? Certainly this was more an issue that, Jean Shaheen faced this as well. And, she faced primary challenges. Mark Fernald ran against her on that grounds. It was less of an issue with Lynch. I mean, we'll see how Hassan handles herself. I mean, certainly, steering a middle course, leaves you open to criticism from the polls, of either side. So.
Right. Well, and she did have a message for the more farther left wing of the Democratic Party yesterday in her speech. Let's hear that.
To those of you who believe deeply in an income tax, I ask you to put that aside. I will veto an income or sales tax. And as we build our next budget, though we have much to address, we must acknowledge that we will not be able to do everything all at once.
Again, that's the new Governor Maggie Hassan talking about income taxes, not being able to address all spending concerns all at once. What did you make of that, Kevin Landrigan, kind of saying to the left, I appreciate your support, but I can't accomplish everything you want me to do?
Yeah, it's an interesting message from her and an important one to make. It's because we need to keep in mind she faced a pretty tough primary challenge from a former colleague, Jackie Cilley. She won a convincing primary, but Jackie Cilley refused to take that pledge, attracted a lot of liberal support for it. I think this new governor starts out with the potential for retaining bona fides with the liberal base more than John Lynch did. And I say that because there are other issues on which she will part company with John Lynch that will appeal to the liberal wing of the Democratic Party, such as legalizing medical marijuana. Governor John Lynch vetoed it when it was approved by both Democratic and Republican-led legislatures. She will sign a bill if it's properly written. Repeal of the death penalty. The last two Democratic governors, John Lynch and Jean Shaheen, both signed bills, laws, to expand the death penalty. She was a loyal Senate majority leader and actually created a commission, Josh will remember, to study the death penalty when the death penalty bill to repeal it had passed the House. She's now in the executive position. There's already legislation filed by Rennie Cushing, one of the New England's leaders in opposing capital punishment, and I expect it will pass the House.
Well, it's also true that some of these issues, particularly in a budget year where things are going to be perhaps more constrained than some Democrats would like, that the other things will attract a lot of interest, sort of more on the social front. And as Kevin points out, these are areas in which Hassan has more in common with the base of her party than John Lynch.
Well, Chris, I appreciate the point. Thanks for the email. exchange@nhpr.org is the email address for you to join us, or you can call 1-800-892-6477. And Josh and Kevin, I want to bring another lawmaker into our conversation now. Steve Shurtleff is with us, Democratic House Majority Leader from Penacook. And Representative Shurtleff, thanks for being with us this morning.
Oh, my pleasure.
Overall, your reaction, Representative Shurtleff?
I was very pleased. I thought the speech was very good, Jesse. And I think it's the speech that Governor Lynch could have given and felt quite comfortable doing so. I was mostly impressed with her first sentences to the joint body present, in that she's looking for a spirit of bipartisanship and collaboration. And I think that's a great message to send.
What more were you hoping to hear, Representative Shurtleff, if anything?
There wasn't anything else that I was really expecting that I didn't hear. I think she gave an overview of what direction her administration will be going in, and I think it's something that's going to resonate with the people of New Hampshire.
Now, you're a former federal marshal, is that correct?
That's
Representative Shurtleff?
Yeah,
and you've spoken out a lot about the gun issue when the House voted earlier this week to ban deadly weapons from the chambers. You were a prominent supporter of that ban.
Yes.
As I understand, you've got legislation to repeal the Stand Your Ground law that the Republicans passed. Governor Hassan made reference to public safety and the Newtown massacre yesterday, but in very vague terms. I want to play that, Representative Shurtleff, and then get your thoughts.
While our faith in those who provide for the safety of our communities should be stronger than ever, we will all need to honor the victims of the Newtown tragedy by coming together to find ways to make our schools and our towns safer and better.
Pretty broad language there, Representative Shurtleff. Were you hoping for something a little more specific?
No, not really. I think there were so many issues that needed to be covered by Governor Hassan, and I was glad that she touched on that, and I was glad that she took the time to, first of all, honor our law enforcement firefighters and first responders. And we know there was a terrible tragedy that took place in Connecticut, and we're still in mourning over that. And we in New Hampshire have had our own losses, and I think, of course, to Greenland in the loss of the police chief. I'm sure this is something that an area where the governor will be proactive, and I know I look forward to working with her and her administration to doing all that we can to keep all of our New Hampshire citizens safe.
Well, Representative Shurtleff, I want to bring Kevin Landrigan in. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yes, Steve. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
I'm wondering what obviously she was talking about trying to not only change the tone in the state, but change the tone in your chamber and to try and as she put it, ended an era of hasty, reactive government. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about these opening days and how you feel the tone could and will change in terms of the debate and the comedy and collegiality in the House.
Well, I think in some respects, Kevin, the tone already has changed. And I think the demeanor of the House was set by Speaker Norelli with her interaction with those who spoke on the House floor and the way she handled the debate on the House rules. I've spoken with members of the Republican leadership, and they, like myself and others in the Democratic leadership, are looking to even greater collegiality and bipartisanship in the House, and I think we're going to see it. There's always going to be those, I guess, in both parties that be a little bit more flamboyant, and their voices will rise in debate. But overall, I think we're going to see the demeanor of the House change quite a bit from last session.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned Speaker Norelli, Representative Shurtleff. She decided that she'd mix up the seating there in the House, having Republicans and Democrats sit next to each other. Is that a token move, or does that make a real difference?
I think it's both. I think it's a message. I think it's the first time this has been done since 1996. And there were those in the Democratic caucus that wondered how effective it would be. But if our first session is any example, I think it worked extremely well. And I think the Speaker did the right thing in doing that. And I said, as I said earlier, she set the tone for our first legislative session. And I think the mixing of the seating was part of that tone.
Okay. Representative Shurtleff, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Bye-bye now.
That's Steve Shurtleff, Democratic House Majority Leader, a representative from Penacook. Josh Rogers, one more thing on the gun issue that I raised with Representative Shurtleff. For all the talk about bipartisanship, there was some partisanship over the ban of guns from the House chambers earlier this week.
Well, I mean, surely there were only a handful of people who voted. I mean, Republicans opposed the reinstatement of this ban. And there were a handful who voted with the Democratic majority. Likewise, there were a couple of Democrats who voted with Republicans. But
did that set? You know, we're talking about Steve Shurtleff talked about bipartisan tone, Speaker Norelli setting the right tone, everybody coming together. But people were upset about this.
Well, this is an issue that gets pretty emotional. And certainly when former House Speaker O'Brien got up at the end and did the parliamentary inquiry, it was, you know, kind of. That was interesting, and you know guns are a hot issue always.
Yeah,
and you know, certainly the House rules. I mean, you know, there's a certain inherent partisanship when you're talking about that kind of thing.
All right, we will talk more after a short break and take your call. So if you're on the line, stay there because we'll be right back.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and the co-op food stores of Hanover, Lebanon, and White River Junction, pursuing cooperative commerce for the greater good of members, employees, and the community at large. And from Golf and Ski Warehouse with stores in Hudson, Greenland, and West Lebanon, New Hampshire, and also in Scarborough, Maine, online at golfandskiwarehouse.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Saturday on Word of Mouth, TED cracks down on X. Organizers of TED's spin-off conferences get a stern warning to stop giving bad science center stage.
That violates one of the most basic laws of physics. So somebody coming up and saying, why with just math we can, you know, sidestep this, really should be making the people vetting it squirm in their seats.
I'm Virginia Prescott with ideas you can stand behind on Word of Mouth, Saturday at noon on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday on The Exchange, a Granite State economic forecast for the new year. Email us your own predictions and economic forecasts at exchange@nhpr.org. And then tune in Monday morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, reactions to Governor Maggie Hassan's inaugural speech yesterday and a look at some of the issues and challenges the new governor faces. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Ask.org. Did you listen to Governor Hassan's speech? What did you hear that you liked? What didn't you like? Or what did you want to hear more of? Also, how optimistic are you that the governor and legislators can work together on issues like the budget and state infrastructure? As we've heard from our two state lawmakers, everybody's hoping to be able to work together to solve problems. How optimistic are you that that will happen? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Kevin Landrigan, Josh Rogers, let's go to our callers now. Jan's been waiting in Dover. Hi, Jan. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Oh, well, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
And I want to thank you and your excellent reporters for their coverage of the election. And I'm calling to hope that you can correct me about something. I didn't hear all of the speech, and so I may have missed any reference the governor might have made to restoring some of the draconian cuts to people with disabilities. I would have put that front and center, and I was appalled not to really hear any reference to that. And I'm a college teacher, and I wouldn't have put the university system first. Of course, I don't teach in New Hampshire. I teach in a nearby state. But I do teach disabilities and literature, and I just found it unfathomable.
Yeah, you know, Jan, it's a good call. Thank you very much. Kevin, did she talk about that at all?
She did not. Jan makes a very good point, and it's a particularly emotional point for Governor Maggie Hassan. As Jan knows, we have a waiting list of folks, primarily adults who have aged out or over 21, who are in need of services because they have developmental disabilities or other impairments, and they're not able to get them. Now, as a state senator, Maggie Hassan wrote a state law which essentially fully funded the waiting list for the first time
Wow.
since the closing of Laconia State School back in the early 1980s. What the difficult and emotional part is twofold. One, her son, Ben, suffers from a severe form of cerebral palsy. He was at the inauguration, a very inspirational, I thought, scene behind the governor while she was speaking. This governor sacrificed, and her husband, Tom, have sacrificed a great deal to assure services and a normal educational life for Ben, and I think they're to be commended about that. But while she was majority leader and in the height of the recession, in that last budget that she helped administer under Governor Lynch in 2009, she suspended the law and the waiting list resumed. During this campaign, she has talked about trying to provide more funding for the waiting list. She's not made a commitment to fully fund it. What's interesting is Josh will remember, of course, is the Republican candidate Ovid LaMontagne actually was the one who promised to find that money, which would be, by the way, about $15 million state dollars a year to fully fund the waiting list.
Josh?
I mean, we'll certainly hear more about this in her budget address. And it, you know, it, when she said the message essentially, I'm going to veto a sales or income tax. And then she said, you know, I think, quote, to those on the other side, I ask you to recognize that there's some things government must do, not only to help our most vulnerable citizens, but to provide a platform for economic growth. So we're going to get the details later. She also talked, as Kevin mentioned, about her son Ben and the importance for every child to have the opportunity to, you know, have an education and be supported. So how much you want to read into those two comments, you know, who knows? But we're going to be hearing more about this.
Yeah, you really can read between the lines because while Jan's right, she didn't specifically mention those programs. She did have broad thoughts about the need for government services. Let's hear what she said.
To those on the other side, I ask you to recognize that there are some things that government must do, not only to help our most vulnerable citizens, but also to provide the platform for economic growth.
Again, Governor Hassan in her speech yesterday, and editing a little bit of the applause just in the interest of time. So, Jan, thank you very much for raising that point. Let's bring another caller in. This is Dennis in Brookline. Hi, Dennis. You're on the exchange. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Thank you for taking my call. I was more interested in local government. Government, the state has their budget, and some local governments depend on state. Local governments have to consolidate more of their efforts for things like highway or police departments where all these towns have their police chiefs. It all comes down to people really don't understand the budget. And this year I was elected into a finance committee. We don't have a committee in our town.
Dennis, this is a terrible phone line, and I do want to get your point into our conversation. So can you make it real brief? I'm sorry to do that to you, but the phone line's bad.
Let me take you off the speaker. Is that better?
Yeah, it is, actually.
Okay. The issue that I see is that people aren't – we need to come together as communities to understand how we are spending our money. And I was fortunate enough to attend an LGC conference. We have one a year that's around in the beginning of the budget season.
That's the local government center. Yeah,
yes, I would think it would be beneficial to people in our state to be informed how budgets work. People that are elected are important to be there, and also the citizens, and to have more of these seminars so where we can get together and talk. And the state can put a little bit of money aside and invite some of these local elected officials in to have these seminars. And until we start talking together and really have programs in place, you can send as many people to Washington as you want. It's not going to work. It has to happen at a local level.
So, Dennis, are you saying that local officials often don't understand how the state budget process works, or that state lawmakers don't understand how the budget process works?
That's right. And I think we need more seminars. And this would get talking happening. This would have educating the people and getting them talking about these things. It has to happen almost in a classroom environment. And then when you bring that back to your local governments, and then you elect the right officials.
Okay.
Graduate these people up.
Well, Dennis, rather than
having these party issues where you watch what Republicans got in, which I happen to be a Republican, and they voted against green energy and to put restrictions on that.
And Dennis, I want to jump in here, and I'm definitely all about helping people understand how these political processes work, and we're going to be doing lots of shows on The Exchange about the budget as it goes through its various iterations. So I totally appreciate the point. I don't know, Josh, if people would come to seminars on how budgets work.
Perhaps.
I mean,
some would. I mean, the interrelation between local, state,
That's
and
really
federal government
how well understood
is complicated.
Is
and, you know, decisions made in one place obviously have repercussions in the other places. And, local aid is a big part of state budgets, you know, the dominant part. And, we're going to be hearing a lot more about downshifting. We do every time a budget's brought up, and particularly in lean times when there have been, you know, cutbacks at many level and need for services at every level of government is high. It's an important part of the discussion.
Well, and I appreciate Dennis's point that, you know, a lot of people come into the system, political system, Josh, every year. You've got new faces, new turnover. It's pretty easy to win a House seat. So I hear what he's saying, that sometimes people come into the legislature and they don't really understand how it all works.
Yeah, I think one of the things also that Dennis is alluding to is there's no argument about it since this very difficult recession that has been a prolonged one has been a financial disaster for cities and towns because, as Josh alluded to, every decision that's made at the state level can have consequences for local budgets, as we saw. And this isn't under the Republican-led legislature over the last 2 years. I use that reference to 4 years because both parties have participated in this. Both parties have downshifted hundreds of millions of dollars in spending that they used to support for local budgets and to keep property taxes low, and have pulled the rug right out from under them. Chief among them, the retirement support. The state, since the mid-1970s, has supported up to 30% of the cost for the public pensions of all municipal, county, and state employees. They now support 0% for municipal employees. That on large budgets, cities such as Concord, that's a hit of in the order of $2 million a year.
Yeah, well, Dennis, thank you for the point. And at least we here on The Exchange will be holding those seminars that you spoke of for sure as the budget process goes forward. So thanks for joining us, Dennis. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And guys, I want to just touch quickly before we close out on a couple things that were not mentioned yesterday by Governor Hassan, but mentioned a lot by candidate Hassan. We touched briefly on gambling, but I want to hear a little bit more from you, Josh Rogers. Again, as you mentioned, Governor Hassan does support limited expansion of gambling. I didn't get an overwhelming sense of support from our panel of lawmakers yesterday, though, for expanded gambling. Not right now, anyway.
Well, I think Kevin mentioned earlier that gambling bill of consequence has not passed the New Hampshire House in decades, and it's a matter of the numbers in the House. It's easier to sell something in Senate districts. It gets very parochial in the House. The polls of both parties have historically opposed gambling, and how do you come up with a plan? I mean, certainly the competition with Massachusetts, which you know has got some casinos online, gambling advocates seem to believe that this will, kind of goose this along. But there haven't been many specifics. You know, yesterday probably wasn't the time to put them in. And, I'll be interested to see, what role it takes in her budget address. I mean, if she sticks out a specific proposal and says, this is what I want, or whether they make the tactical calculation that, handing in a lean budget and then, kind of using this as a, bayonet at the backs of recalcitrant House members who may want to fund more things, okay, you want to do this? Well, then, let's do it together. And then, Senator Bradley indicated it would probably have smoother sailing in the Senate, although, they have their own ideas about what sort of plan they would like, according to Senator Bradley, the Republicans do. So this debate is going to be going on until the budget closes.
That's often how it happens with these gambling debates, right, Josh? They come up sort of at the end when people have exhausted all other ideas.
I mean, they have, and how much Governor Hassan says, loud and proud, I want a casino, remains to be seen.
And another thing that didn't come up in this speech that will be huge for the new governor, Kevin, and that's Medicaid expansion, which is supposed to happen under President Obama's Affordable Care Act. I think New Hampshire is supposed to cover anywhere from 30,000 to 50,000 more people under Medicaid.
That's correct. It's a probably the most significant health care expansion in New Hampshire since we've had Medicaid itself, which now serves about 120,000 people. And the Republicans' leadership in the legislature at this point have pretty well dug in their heels in opposition to this. They make the point that a consultant to the Department of Health and Human Services has indicated it's going to cost the state $85 million, primarily administrative costs, to expand Medicaid. And there is a concern that the more you advertise that a fully expanded Medicaid is available, you have what's called the woodwork effect. We now have about 40,000 people in this state who are eligible for Medicaid but don't apply. And in most states and in most studies that have been done, this kind of expansion leads to a number of these folks who were eligible before coming out and seeking support. Now, the Federal Affordable Care Act does not provide the all-encompassing funding for those people who would come out and who were earlier eligible. So
I see.
The state would only get its 50% federal grant. It wouldn't get the
– For those folks.
It wouldn't get the 100% for the first 3 years and 90% 2020 for those new eligible people. So these are all warnings the Republicans are making about the financial hit from an expansion of Medicaid.
So will this be an up or down vote, Kevin? I mean, will it be, yes, we will expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, or no, we won't? Is it going to be that simple, or does it get more complicated?
It probably will be more complicated. I think it's interesting. We actually still don't have federal rules from the U.S. Health and Human Services Department as to how states are to opt in or opt out. If you remember, this was part of the U.S. Supreme Court decision, which essentially said it was unconstitutional for the Affordable Care Act to force states to expand Medicaid. And if they didn't expand Medicaid in this case, actually lose all reimbursement potentially for all their Medicaid population. That was coercive and illegally so. But the Supreme Court decision doesn't lay out, well, Does every state in unless they opt out? Is every state out unless they opt in? We're still waiting for those rules, but we anticipate it's going to have to be a separate piece of legislation that will have to go through the normal process.
And another item that has come up in other inaugural speeches before, Josh, and was not in this one, was a promise to resolve New Hampshire's long debate over the state's role in funding local public education. Almost all the education talk in the speech yesterday was about higher education, very little about K through 12.
True. I think that, you know, that issue is always out there. And, you know, there's you know, part of it may be a recognition that there's not much of an appetite for a constitutional amendment among Democrats. You know, when Governor Lynch, you know, putatively came together with Republicans on one last year, not a single Democrat in the House voted for it.
Not a single one.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, you know, this is a festering issue, and I think rallying people to common cause around higher education is an easier sell. And, you know, the heat is a little bit off on secondary school funding. I mean, certainly there are pressures on communities, and, you know, if it were to go back to court, you know, who's to say how that would turn out? But it's not something that Governor Hassan campaigned much on either.
All right. Well, what's next then, Josh? What are you going to be covering in the weeks ahead as this new administration gets on its feet?
Getting ready for the budget and, you know, sort of watching and listening to see how Governor Hassan performs and kind of comedy between the chambers.
Is there comedy between the chambers?
Yes. It's a question I ask myself often.
When is that budget address?
Well, that will be, you know, in about 6 weeks, middle of February.
Right, and that's where we'll get some details, and we'll have a lot more to talk about. Guys, thank you very much for coming in. Josh, thanks for being here.
You're welcome, Laura.
Josh Rogers, NHPR senior political reporter. Kevin, it was great to see you. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
Kevin Landergan, political reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua, lead writer for The Lobby and H. com. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, we begin with a New Year's economic forecast for New England and New Hampshire, which a recent report calls uncertain. Then we look at the mental health care debate in the Granite State, especially after the Newtown shootings. And later we talk with the author of a new book called Tax and Spend, which explores the deep roots of American anti-tax sentiment. Email us at nhpr.org and join us all next week for The Exchange, every morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show and the Friday News Roundup is next at 10 o'clock on NHPR.